Well, again, so glad that you're here with us as we continue this service and in this series on unchecked baggage. But before I jump into today, just wanted to make a couple comments about this past week. One, who knew that we would start off last Sunday with a message about not worrying and then have all the stuff that happened this week to worry about, right? It's like God gave you homework to begin with the fires that broke out and that we're still battling and looking for how is this going to resolve. What an incredible opportunity to put into practice this idea of not worrying. But I want to tell you before we jump into today's message, a little bit about what we're doing as a church. And I first just got to say this, I am so, so proud of St. Andrew's. At first, I've heard stories this week about people who saw the needs and just jumped in on their own, like people who opened up their homes and are housing displaced folks from the Pasadena area. We've heard about a group, the Tribe group, which is young moms with toddlers working together through that time, building community, and they decided, they knew some folks that had been displaced that were impacted. They just, on the spur of a moment, opened up a spot, started collecting things for these families. They filled up four office suites that one of our members opened up for us with clothes and diapers and car seats and all of the things that are going to be needed to restore. Start just on their own. It was beautiful. And then we saw as some folks opened up houses, rental property they had to people who were displaced to stay there for free or reduced. And then other folks who came and brought meals and cookies and just said, we see you. And then yesterday, we opened up this campus and just said, we're going to collect water bottles for first responders. And we collected over 5,000 pounds of water in just a couple of hours that you guys showed up, the community came out. It was really amazing. And there's more to come because we're still trying to figure out, along with crisis response, like what are the next steps? So there's more that's going to come, but I want you to know that you have been the church already, and I'm so proud to call this my family. So thank you, St. Andrew's. Thank you for that. Stay tuned with us because we'll have more things today. Pastor Manny is in West LA and Pastor Julie just left during this service to head up to Pasadena, and we're coordinating with folks there on the ground for what our next steps will be. So there'll be lots of opportunity for you to be involved. You can always give online. You can go and give through our regular way of doing that. There's a button that says Crisis Relief, and you can also give a check and just write in that LA City Fire or Crisis Relief, and we'll make sure that that works. So can't wait to tell you how all of that happens. But today, we got to keep moving with this series we're in because we all came in this year with a lot of baggage. And last week, I showed you the largest backpack the history of mankind has ever seen. And we talked about one of the things that was in there last week that we're carrying around. That's worry. And you guys, we had a little bit of like super practical, like just how do we deal with the stuff that we worry with? And one guy, this is my favorite text I got this week. He sent me a text and he said, look, with a lot of skepticism and a little bit of hope, I filled out one of those cards and I wrote down what I'd been worried about. I dropped it in that suitcase out there. And he goes, I haven't worried about this thing since I put it in. Something I've been worried about for decades. I dropped it in and I haven't worried about it again since then. And I thought, one, well, it was 10:45, so he hadn't had that much time. But two, I think that's just what happens sometimes when we put into practice little steps of obedience and kind of being physically moving in the direction God asks, we experience his grace comes in really powerful ways. So we're done with worry. We all got that from last week. If you didn't catch it, go back and watch the message. This week, we're talking about everybody's favorite, anger. Aren't you so glad we get to talk about your and my anger? How do we get rid of this weight of anger? When Jessica and I were still dating, some of you know I played basketball in college and then for a little while afterwards. And the first time she ever got to see me play was after all that. I was playing in a pro-am league. It was a league in Charlotte that had lots of former teammates of mine that had people that used to be my rivals. We would play on Monday nights and it was intense. The stakes were super high. Like our egos, our reputations, sometimes there'd be side bets. It was a really, really big deal. And one game, the first time she got to see me, we're playing, and there's this guy on the other team that just chirped nonstop for the first half. Like every time we were down, he was talking at people. He was being a jerk. He was throwing elbows. He set picks that were clearly illegal but didn't get called. And it was just so annoying. I know our Newport Harbor basketball team, several of you guys come for, this is just for you today, this illustration. So he's doing this all first half. And by the second half, I'm just completely annoyed. Well, one of my friends is taking off on a fast break on this play. Kevin beats everybody down the floor except for this one guy who comes racing out of nowhere. And now we have real jobs at this point. Like we're adults, you know, the kind where if you go on short-term disability, it affects stuff. And this guy runs up and takes the legs out from under my friend Kevin. He does like a flip, lands on his head, and it is, the whole room is just like, well, in that moment, everything in me welled up into a surge of adrenaline and righteous, holy anger. And I planted that guy into the wall with all 255 pounds of my body weight as hard as I could. Nailed him up against the wall to show him that you don't do that to one of my friends. And I was vindicated. It was right. It was awesome too, by the way. Amazing moment. Well, the refs didn't see it exactly the same way. And so me and one guy had a little chat. And then he was nice enough to escort me away from that area after I had said some things over to the bench where he kindly asked me to put my shoes on and to leave. So Jessica, in her very first time watching me, is like, who is this person? And why do we have to leave? And I'm like, no, we have to leave the building. We can't even stay in the game. I got ejected, completely thrown out. I say all that to say, I want you to think of me as a hero. And if you could back up that story, like in that moment, it was right. He deserved it. But if you backed the story up like 6 hours, like a Christopher Nolan movie, you know, like run it backwards, see the scene beforehand, maybe even a day or a week before, you would have probably seen what only I saw in reflection. And that was, I was preparing for that outburst of anger with all kinds of little moments. Snubbed at work. Fearful about hitting my numbers, budget not looking the way it was supposed to, probably some kind of argument with a friend. I had been building up this storehouse of anger that got unleashed on the jerk that took my friend's legs out from under him. And I want to tell you, we got to figure out a different way to deal with that stuff, because you have it too. And if we're not handling our anger, it is handling us. So I'm going to read to you today from Ephesians 4, little passage. You're going to hear these words, and you're going to, kind of like last week, you're going to go, this is too simple. And it is. It's just not easy. Apostle Paul says this in Ephesians 4, starting in verse 26. He says, in your anger, so clearly he believes we're going to get angry, in your anger, do not sin. Easy for you to say, Paul. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. Don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Thanks be to Paul for pointing out in very imperative terms that we should just not be angry. So I want to show you, how do we actually do that? And to do it, first, we got to understand what anger is. Anger, and you know this, but anger is, it's a natural response. Anger is not really the problem. Anger is something that happens whenever we experience a perceived hurt or a real hurt, whenever we observe injustice, or when we're afraid of something. Anger is like the light on the dashboard. It's not the problem, but it tells you that there is a problem. And anger is completely normal. Anger is in fact what we call a secondary emotion that arises from one of these other scenarios. And there are three types of anger. First type of anger is the kind that we all love to hate, and that's the explosive type. This is the kind that we like to make fun of people or that we stay away from. It's the people that just, in the moment, they lose it, they fly off the handle, they're loud, they do rash things. It's explosive anger, and you all know somebody like this. And if you're sitting beside them, don't elbow them. We all know somebody that has explosive anger. But if you don't have explosive anger, it does not mean necessarily that you don't have an anger problem. Because those are the ones that like to label as the problem. But there's also another kind of anger. There's the kind that I call like stewing and brewing anger. It's the marinating kind. It's like slow burning. The kind where you use sarcasm and stonewalling and the silent treatment and distance, right? Where you can still show your anger, but you know that revenge is best served cold, right? It reminds me, there's this story of a couple. They were celebrating their 70th anniversary. They've been married a really long time. And this elderly lady says to the husband, she's like, you know, she was the explosive anger type. She's like, I just don't understand it. All these years, and I have had so many outbursts. How have you managed to just keep your cool all this time? And he goes, oh, it's simple. When you would get mad at me like that, I would just go clean the toilet. She's like, and that helped? And he goes, well, yeah, I used your toothbrush. That's the kind of marinating anger that we get back with people that's just as destructive as the explosive type. But then there's another type, and that's the kind that turns from anger into something even deadlier. It's even more corrosive to your soul, destructive to your relationship, and that's when it goes to bitterness. In fact, so many times in our lives, anger is just the fruit that comes from this bitter root. This thing that takes and lodges itself down inside of us, and we store up the old offenses and the old hurts. We allow them to keep being replayed, and we hold on to it for some time until we just grow bitter. And bitterness will kill you, literally. Some have called it like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. We've talked about how it affects your heart rate, it affects your cholesterol levels, it works on your extreme stress and anxiety. Bitterness will kill you, but before it kills you, it will make you miserable and lonely. So we got to deal with this stuff. But here's the thing, anger, and this is what I want you to know, your response to anger, three things. It can be learned. Meaning, you actually model how you learn from those who model how to express anger in your life, your parents, your friend groups. You learn how to deal with your anger from other people. So it's learned, but it's also learned because whenever we do it, it's sort of a self-reinforcing thing. Like you get really angry, and sometimes, many times often, you get your way, don't you? You get super angry, you blow up on somebody, and they give you what you ask for. They just don't give you what you want. It's not resolution. You just get in the moment the thing that you're angry about. So we can learn it, which means we can also unlearn it. Anger can be controlled. This is the bad news if you're sitting here kind of sweaty-palmed right now thinking, why is he talking to me? But it's the bad news, and it's also the good news. You can learn to control your anger, and anger can be good. See, if you think about it, the reason that we get angry is because Tim Keller says it like this, anger is love in motion to protect something that we deeply care about. Whenever you feel anger, it's because you sense a threat and there is a righteous desire, like me with that dude on the basketball court, there is a desire to protect something that you love. So it can be good. In fact, David Pallison, who wrote the book Good and Angry, he was a counselor and a leader of some Christian ethics movements, but really, really good stuff. Good and Angry, in this book, he talks about this fact. He says, who's the angriest person in the scripture? You think about the Bible, who's the angriest person in the Bible? It's God. And some of you are like, I knew it! I knew that was the case. But it's God's anger that's actually good, because it's his anger. His anger is different than ours. It's always for a purpose. His anger, God's anger, is always righteous, and it's always intended to move toward the redemption of people. It's moved to the restoration of situations. It's moved to the relief of oppression. God's anger is always about those who mar his creation, the thing that he loves the most. Just like if you saw your kid being abused, your anger would be right to move toward and stop it. In fact, one person said, you know, we all would get that it's a sin to be angry without a cause, to just be generally angry without a reason. That's sinful. That's not God's design. But it's equally sinful to have a cause and to not be angry. If you look around and you see the injustice, you see the way things are destroying God's good intention for his world and for people, and it doesn't make you angry, you should actually check your heart. Because we should be like God is. There's a good God kind of anger. But his anger is unique from ours. There's this one place in Scripture, I think I've told you this before, it's Exodus 34. God is, for the very first time, telling Moses who he is. And in it, he gives his name and his own description of his character. And he says this, like his LinkedIn profile, he says, "The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness." Slow to anger. God, while he is angry, it takes a long time. In fact, the Hebrew word for this is kind of funny. It's the word long-nosed. To be slow to anger is to be long-nosed. Some of you are very slow to anger. The reason that it says this is there's a Hebrew understanding of anger that makes total sense once I tell you. And they believe this, like anger starts in your gut. It starts in that deep place inside you, and you feel it like almost a pit, or you feel a little sick. And then it spreads upward into your chest, and you begin to feel the tightening of your chest in anger. And the more it goes, it gets up into your neck. And some of you have that thing where when you get mad, you can't hide it because your neck gets really red and splotchy, you know? And it moves from that into your jaws, and you clench, and then ultimately, when you get really angry, your nose, your nostrils start to flare. You know what I'm talking about? God has a long nose. It takes a long time for him to get to that point, which is such a beautiful thing. It's so beautiful that he says, "I want you to mimic me. I want you to learn how to not have explosive anger, how to not have simmering, stewing anger. I want you to learn how to have good and slow, long-nosed anger." But the other person who's equally as angry as God in the Bible is Satan, the devil, the enemy, the accuser, the one who wants to destroy all his stuff. And he is angry without purpose. There's no long-term plan for redemption or restoration. He just wants to see everything destroyed. In fact, you remember in a Christopher Nolan movie, The Dark Knight, whenever they're looking for the Joker, played by Heath Ledger in that one, they're trying to figure out who he is. And Batman is talking to Alfred, and he's like, you know, is it somebody who's like been hurt and wronged? And he's like, nope. Like, is it someone who's greedy, wants power? And like, nope. And he goes, well, who is it then? And Alfred says, some men just want to watch the world burn. That's how the enemy is angry. To just use that anger response to destroy. And that's what he's after in your life through your anger and through mine, is to find a way to destroy and just watch the world burn. What we all know is that if we nurse our anger, if we make it a little pet, if we bring it in and hold on to it and keep it close, it ultimately grows up to destroy us. Frederick Buechner said this. I love the imagery in it. He says, of the seven deadly sins, anger is possibly the most fun. There's lust, but then like that anger, the most fun. To lick your wounds, to smack your lips over grievances long past, to roll over your tongue the prospect of bitter confrontations still to come, to savor to the last toothsome morsel both the pain you are given and the pain you are giving back. In many ways, it's a feast fit for a king. The chief drawback is that what you're wolfing down, though, is yourself. The skeleton at the feast is you. So what are we going to do with this anger that is not in itself sin, but can so easily become sinful? In order to get rid of the baggage, the weight of anger, the baggage of bitterness, in order to just jettison it from our lives, we got to do two things, and this is the rest of the message real quick. First, we have to identify it, and secondly, we have to deal with it. We have to identify it first. How do we know the difference between anger that could be righteous and not? Well, there's really a couple of questions you ask. Here's how you identify it. You first ask, is it aligned with God's concerns? Is what you're mad about something that God, we see, is mad about as well? If it's something that would break his heart or that would cause pain to his creatures, those he loved, if it's something that's anti his kingdom, if you're mad about that, that's the first question. Yeah, okay, it's aligned with God's concern. Could be righteous. But then you got to ask the second question. Is my anger about this thing that's clearly wrong, is it about God's glory or is it about my own? Am I mad about this because I look really good being mad about it? I can be a vigilante for righteousness. See, it's funny. Sometimes what we call righteous anger, if you really, really look under the hood, it's just self-righteous anger. See, if it was really righteous anger, why don't we get just as mad at the sin in our own life as what we see from other people, right? So I can be really mad at their sexual sin, but I'm very comfortable just keeping my greed. I can be so fed up and angry, incensed over their belittling someone, but I'm okay with me grandstanding. I can be super angry about their mistreatment, but perfectly okay with my mismanagement. Do you see how it becomes not actually righteous? It's self-righteous. It's a way to make ourselves look and feel better. It's kind of like when I took that kid out. I did want to teach him a lesson, but I really liked how cool I looked in front of my new girlfriend, now my wife. That was amazing. Third, does it lead to constructive or destructive behavior? Is it just to burn it down? See, this is why this week, some of you, while you were trying to deal with worry about the fires, something else rose up in you, and it was this response of anger. And it would be real easy for us to say, we just want to destroy. Like, we're mad about the way that it's handled. We're mad about what's being done or what's not being done. We feel this thing rise up, and that is okay. It's our response to it that can be the problem. Is it constructive or is it destructive? Once you get through these questions, you realize that if you want to get free of that, let's say it's something that's not God's. It's not righteous anger anymore. Now I got to deal with it. Here's how I'm going to do it. Real quick, back to those scriptures that we already looked at. First, the anger analysis. Here's what I do. I have to ask the question, what do I love that is threatened right now? Okay, so clearly I sense anger. What do I love that's underneath this? What am I loving so much that I'm upset that it's threatened? If you played the movie back from my basketball time, if you look back a few days before, I was at a restaurant, was on a lunch break, busy, running kind of late, and clearly I was wearing my invisibility cloak because the waiter didn't see me. And I waited and nobody came and took my order. They didn't even acknowledge my existence. And you know, I mean, that's really brash to do for somebody like me. 28-year-old at the time, middle management, kind of entry-level job guy, I was important in my own mind. And the snub wasn't just because they were busy or maybe because something had happened on his end. I didn't think about any of that. All I thought about is, why am I not getting served right now? Because my agenda and my timeline is so incredibly important. And that started something in me that I was mad about, simmering on. Maybe you've had one of those things lately. You didn't blow up. You just you just learned when you looked under the hood that the thing that you love so much that's threatened is you. I just love me a lot. I wondered like how much of this stuff to share with you guys, because I'm figuring like how much can you handle and still keep coming back? And so if you ever want to get up and kind of do your thing, that's cool. We can trade. But I know this is in me, my desire to be important. And maybe it's in you too, or maybe there's another version of it. You got to look under the hood and ask, what is it that I love that's threatened right now? And then we take Paul at his word and we begin to deal with it. Here's how to handle it. First, he says, in your anger, don't sin. Don't let the sun go down. Now, how many of you have ever, you heard this when you were young, maybe in premarital counseling or something, they said, don't let the sun go down on your anger. And you made this commitment. We're not going to sleep until we solve the issue. Anybody done that? How's it worked? Because like sometimes, I don't know that Paul actually literally meant this is what you have to do, don't fall asleep. Here's what he's trying to say, two things. One, make sure that you have a time limit on your anger. Don't nurse it. Don't find it a nice, sweet place to curl up in your heart and your soul. Don't keep it around. You have to deal with it. And he says, don't let the sun go down, meaning don't allow this to just perpetually continue. Decide that you're going to get rid of it. Here's the other thing he means. He means that, well, you remember in Romans 12:19, Paul says this. It's this promise from God. He says, I, the Lord, I will bring vengeance. You don't do that. I'll take care of it. I will repay. And it's an incredible promise, because what it allows us to do is say, usually if I'm holding it past the night, if I'm mad about something and I keep holding on and nursing it, usually it's because I'm trying to figure out how they can pay for what they did wrong. And God says, you know what? You can go to sleep and I'll take care of it. I will repay. I'll bring justice. I'll make it right. I'll bring vengeance. And he does, either at the cross, where that offense is paid for and his justice is unleashed on it, just like on my sin, or one day in separation, eternal separation from him, in a place called hell that we don't like to talk and think about very much, but a place where without the covering of the blood of Christ, all sins will be made right in his justice. You can go to sleep and let God take it. He says, don't give the devil a foothold. You know, once in the World War II, that moment, the reason why we talk about D-Day so much, that day at Normandy when they landed on the beach and they secured that spot, once that happened, the war was effectively over. They still had to play it out. They had to work through, and there were still lives that would be lost. But from that moment on, that foothold on the beach in that part of enemy territory, that ended it. And the same is true in your life and in mine. If Satan is allowed a foothold in your life with anger that you hold on to, the war is over. The relationship might be over. You've got to keep him out of it. He can't have a space. You can't allow that to stick around and let him have place, room to work in your life. So we deal with it first by choosing to say, God, you handle the vengeance. Secondly, we have to eject it. You have to get rid of all bitterness. Paul goes on this whole list, and he just kind of at the end says, in case I missed anything, every other form of malice, like all of it, you got to get rid of it. Don't act on it. Choose to say, I want to get revenge, I'm not. I want to fight, I'm not. You just simply choose, because remember, anger is learned and it can be chosen. You can do it, you can control it. You need help. You need the Spirit of God to help you. You need to take it to him and say, I don't know how to do this right now, but please take this feeling, take this emotion out. Help me to honestly and faithfully do what you're asking. And then third, he says, release it and release them. Whoever you're upset about, whoever has wronged you, the offender, you release them. This is really hard. And I know it's really hard for some of you, because the person that offended you, it wasn't just a snub. It wasn't just something that happened in a game. This was real life, and it was a soul wound that they did to you. For some of you, you've carried this anger around because it was abuse, or it was trauma, or it was something, some kind of betrayal, and you don't know that you can ever, you can't imagine how you could ever let them go because you don't see that justice has been done yet. And for some of you, that person, they're already gone. Like, they're out of your life, or they may not even be alive anymore. And you and I are still walking around waiting to be repaid. And God says, just give it to me. You've got to let go of this. You've got to release it. You've got to forgive, which does not mean you restore the relationship necessarily. It means you have to stop holding them to paying you back. You have to say, I let it go. And you know how you do that? Over and over and over again. It's not a one-time thing. You wake up tomorrow and you say, I forgive them, I forgive them, I forgive them. You say it 1,000 times if that's what you have to say. And then the next day you wake up and you say it 900 times. And eventually it gets smaller and smaller. And at some point you find, but only if you engage it, you find that God takes this thing that's a gaping wound and it becomes a scab and then it becomes a scar. And eventually you remember what happened, but they don't owe you anymore. And folks, I want this for us so bad. Because sometimes when I talk to people and I can see what's presenting, and then I look underneath the surface and I want to just like say, don't you know it's the, I want to look at me and say this, like, don't you know you're still holding on to that? And it's killing you. It's simple, it's just not easy. But you don't have to carry it any longer. See, the gospel is all about how God took care of this, his love in action in anger. The way that the gospel resolved this stuff. In love, God's anger toward our sin came on Jesus. When he was crucified on that cross, like, certainly, there was political forces at work. There was religious forces at work. There were a group of people that wanted him out of their life. All that is true, but that is not why he was crucified. His death on the cross was God's anger in love to deal with your sin and my sin, to erase its penalty forever. That's why it was so brutal. That's why it was so horrific. That's why you and I should never tire of remembering and recalling what he did. Because in that moment, he took care of all of it, all of yours. But in love, God's anger also destroyed the power of the sin. That's the resurrection. When he came out of the grave, like after having all that dumped on him, now the power that you and I experienced before, where we were unable not to do wrong, he says, I have broken its back. You can actually live this way. You and I, we can control our anger. We can control our forgiveness. We can do it because he broke it at the cross. And then, finally, in love, God's anger will deliver us ultimately from the pain of other sins. There's a day coming when all of it will be made right. And until that day, you and I, we just keep getting up and saying, okay, God, it's yours again today. It's yours. Here you go. Take it. I won't carry this anymore. That's the good news of the gospel message. You don't have to be angry anymore. And God is not angry at you anymore. There's a couple of books, if you want them, I'm going to put this up on the screen, some resources to kind of help. And you might want to take a picture of this. If this is an issue you deal with, these resources were ones I've used here and other times. Good and Angry by David Pallison, the last one's the one I mentioned earlier. And then my favorite title of a book of all time, Respectable Sins by Jerry Bridges. It's great. Respectable Sins, the ones we're very okay with, right? But those are super helpful. Also on our website, because I know we're stirring some stuff up in this series and there's more to come. It's good, but I know it's stirring up. And we've got a list of psychologists and counselors and coaches and people to help you with this. If you go to our website and you're struggling with this or somebody else you know, click that link and you can get all the help you could ever need. Or just call us and one of our pastors. We'd love to help walk you through it. I know this doesn't happen overnight, but I know it can happen. And we want you to be free. So can we just, right now, before we close in worship, can we just pray, like together? And I think I'd love to have you join me in this prayer. I'm going to pray for you generally, but why don't you pray with God specifically? Why don't you start with that person that you're angry? Maybe it's been a really long time that you've been holding on to this. Maybe it's new and fresh. I don't know exactly what it is, but I know that God does. And he wants to heal and he wants to take it from you. So, Heavenly Father, right now, in this room, with those watching online, there are as many different versions of a story of offense and hurt as any of us could possibly write or imagine. We're surrounded by friends in this room that have had to go through difficult things. God, some of them reach deep, decades back, to places that shape who we are, and we don't even totally realize it. There are places where we respond before we can even think about it, and it's an old script, it's an old wound that's still open. And Jesus, the first thing that I want to pray for myself and my friends here is that you would come in your grace and your mercy and you'd begin to heal those places. We may not ever be able to have the conversation of resolution or reconciliation. The person that hurt us, they might not even be alive, Jesus, but you can do now in us what we need. And so first, we need you. And King Jesus, we're also angry about some stuff that we see. And that stirred up in us this sense of justice, a need for things to be fixed. And the problem is we can't always control that. And so I ask that you would also come and you'd show us where it's productive. And you would help us to know what action to take as we deal with it, that we would speak truth and love and we'd move towards righting things, but we would do it in a sense like you, with a long nose, slow to anger, focused on an outcome, dealing with the problem, not the person. Jesus, it's what you did for us. I can't believe it. I can't believe that of all the ways that I have wronged and rebelled and continue to, that all of that stuff you took and dealt with finally on the cross. Thank you. I pray now that as we attempt to hand it off to you, God, would you give us strength? Would you give us courage to face and name? Would you give us perseverance? We're going to need you to come alongside us, but this weight is too heavy. It's too much. And so we ask you to take it and to replace it with a lightness of being that comes from your peace flooding our hearts. Jesus, we pray this in your resurrected name.